I have to put it in my... This didn't work. This joke did not work. It's okay. I have the power to edit it out.
I like this and you like that. It's just another review podcast. We pick a show, sit down and chat. Now listen to the start of our show, because it's now.
Hello and welcome to Just Another Review Podcast. I'm one of your two hosts, Russ.
And I'm the other half, Sean. Russ and I have been friends since the 80s.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah, quite a while of time. And for this podcast, we get together and we review stuff.
Like the first episode of a new streaming show and a movie from our childhood. And then we let you know if you should watch it or avoid it.
Crush it or cringe it.
Now with that, Sean, what are we reviewing this episode?
Well, this episode, our second episode, Russ, we are reviewing the lovely, lovely show called The Liberator. This is a World War II episodic on Netflix. The first episode is entitled Why We Fight. This was recommended to me by my father, who...
My dad.
Who you know, my dad. No, my dad, not your dad, my dad.
Oh, sorry.
And yeah.
And did you say Liberator or Liberators?
It's singular.
Okay, it's
the Liberator.
Oh, I think it's the Liberators.
Oh, is it? Am I getting this all wrong?
We beg to differ. Oh. I beg to differ.
Is it?
Well, I don't think there was one Liberator. I think there was many of them.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So when I read the Liberator, I get confused.
All right, well, I'm going to Google it right now.
All right. Are we starting from scratch now or what?
No, I think you're right. It's called the Liberator.
See, that's what I thought. It's weird because it's like...
This is our first problem with the series.
And it's kind of an animated, series. The animation technique is called Trioscope Enhanced Hybrid Animation.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
Yeah, we can get a little further into it, as I'm sure, but you know, is it animation? Is it not animation?
Is it just a cheap way to do a TV show?
Looking at the cast list, I don't recognize anybody on this list. And yeah, it's inspired by true life events, a story about a group of liberators, the Thunderbirds, as we'll see. And this is a first time full length for this director. Good luck pronouncing this. Gregory Chikajongjong.
You did a great job.
I don't think so. I think I butchered his name pretty bad. This guy, he came from, looked up his IMDb, came from a couple short films prior to this. And mainly, he's a visual effects guru. Worked on Star Wars, The Revenant, a couple other ones. This guy's got a long list of visual effects backgrounds. And that's it. He has no other feature film or full length directorial credits that I can see. So, yeah.
So, Sean, you mentioned in the intro that this is recommended by your dad.
Yes.
And your dad is named Larry.
His name is Larry.
And the character of this show is Felix Lawrence Sparks, or how he likes to be called by his friends, Larry. So recommended by a Larry to watch a Larry.
Oh, this is just an odd coincidence. It's just unreal.
Do you think all Larrys support Larrys?
I would think they all join together somewhere, and somehow they've got some sort of common bond.
We talked a little bit about in our last episode that we have been friends since the 1980s, most likely 1989. And when I moved to the town that you already lived in, my mom bought the place with your dad, who was our realtor.
You're not going to claim that you bought the house this time.
No, I'm going to totally admit the fact that it was my mom who purchased the house. And as I was only 10 years old, I did not have the money to put a down payment on a house at that time. But I recall, I have a vivid memory of sitting in the car with your dad as he drove us. What kind of car did you drive? What was your dad's realtor car? I can't remember. I remember it had a car phone in it, which was a pretty big deal.
Oh, I don't know, man. My dad changed cars every 3 years, so...
Okay. So it was a nice car, and he was driving us around, which I think was part of like
the Pontiac at that time. Maybe. Okay.
It felt part of the whole, like, the experience of having a realtor is he would pick us up and drive us around. And my sister and myself and my single mom recently divorced. And I remember your dad mentioning in the car, I have a vivid memory of him going, well, I've got a son your age. And a little, let him behold, I went into elementary school, the same elementary school you were in. And we became fast friends.
It was meant to be.
And every, I don't know if your dad would just constantly do this, but we would always have notepads by the telephone with a picture of your dad, like a black and white picture of your dad kind of jumping, but he was wearing a suit, but he was jumping like he just won the lottery.
Yeah,
or
it was like
sold
the
out.
Irish jig, I think. Something yeah. like that. Yeah, so I was constantly reminded with those notepads. They were plastered on my locker. People would... just bring them and show them to me. And is this your dad? I was like, yeah, yeah, that's my dad doing the Irish jig.
And so, well, thank you. Thank you, Sean's dad, for recommending the Liberator.
Yeah, yeah. And Russ reminds me of that beautiful story every Christmas with a nice card and how we met. And yeah, he wants to make it into an animated series. We'll see about that. Maybe we'll use this. Fucking tri-scope finance hybrid animation something.
The rotoscoping technology, I it doesn't appeal to me, and I think I have like a little post-traumatic stress disorder still from. Did you ever watch the Lord of the Rings cartoon?
Yeah, I remember actually watching a bit of it at your house, and
okay, well there you go.
Yeah, it was a bit. Odd animation, something we weren't really used to, almost like it was right. drawn over live action kind of thing, wasn't it?
Right. So there was real animation, and then there was rotoscoping used in it. And I remember always being completely put off by when they transitioned between regular animation to rotoscoping. I remember always kind of being like, this doesn't work for me as a kid. And now it still doesn't. I don't think I've ever seen a use of rotoscoping that's worked for me. And I don't think I've seen a lot, unfortunately.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I don't even think the term of actual rotoscoping, which is actually cutting out the image, was even used in this show. I believe this was all filmed on a green screen. And instead of being cut out, these guys were just matted out and then put onto a background and put this shitty Photoshop filter on it. We can get into that. Let's get into the show. We haven't talked anything about the show. No, yeah.
I don't think you noticed that when you swore there, money went into the swear jar.
Right. Yeah. I noticed. I heard that. That's something you've decided to implement, our swear jar, right?
Yeah, I'm a little bit concerned about how much you swore in the first episode. So now that every time you do swear, or hopefully you won't ever again, you have to put money in the swear jar. So
I have to put money in the swear jar.
That's the point of the swear jar. Yeah,
I see. So it's a bit of a deterrent. So I watch my mouth a little bit.
Yeah, please. That'd be great.
Well, God. So just kidding. I will. I don't have a lot of extra cash on me, so I'll watch it. Let's get into it. It begins with a narration on July 10th, 1943. A unit from Oklahoma consisting of Mexican Americans, Native Americans, and Dust Bowl Cowboys landed in Sicily and went on a 500-day trek through Nazi territory, where they were known as the Thunderbirds.
Now, why wasn't the show called the Thunderbirds?
I don't know. Why is it the Liberators and not called the Thunderbirds?
Right. And why is it the Liberator when there was many Thunderbirds?
Right. I even screwed that up again. It's the Liberator.
Liberator as in like this is just about Felix. So no one else matters.
Larry.
Just the white guy.
This is about Larry. How did you even get his name? Did they say his name somewhere?
My friends call me Larry. Oh. No, the Netflix show calls him Felix Sparks, and I think I watched a YouTube video where they interviewed Larry,
right?
And he referred to himself.
You cheated.
Yeah, Yeah, I did some research, recon.
Oh, shit.
And
I didn't do any. Oh, there's that swear jargon. Sorry.
Yeah. And then so that gives me my first weird impression about Larry, because his name is Felix Sparks, but he prefers his friends call him Larry. I mean, the guy's name is Felix Sparks. I mean, I would want to be called Felix or Sparks. But no, call me Larry.
He ain't all there, is he? I don't think he's I don't think Larry's all there. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But yeah. So like we.
So the.
Oh, is it?
That is Emma Yamato.
Go ahead.
Now, I was going to say the show starts in Sicily, but their actual campaign started in North Africa and then went to Sicily. And yeah, it was a pretty long campaign for those guys. They went all the way.
500 days, dude.
Yeah. And I don't think that was anything they anticipated. And so, yeah, that's pretty crazy. True life.
Do you know anything about these Thunderbird guys? History knowledge of these Thunderbird guys?
Only just kind of looking through a few things, you know. I'm not an expert on World War II, though I'm always interested to learn a little bit more. So this I mean, the best thing that probably happened about this episode, it made me do a little bit more research on World War II, which I should know more about, and also kind of my own family's experience with World War II. So that was probably the best thing that came out of the show, was my own research outside of watching the show. But yeah, these guys landed in North Africa. That was their first, but they arrived there once the campaign was done. So they did a little training there and then headed over Sicily, cleared Sicily, and then went over to mainland Italy, which I think is where, the action kind of starts for this show.
And then the show finally opens up with an ambush. We've got our Thunderbirds are suddenly in a gunfight and the squad has to get down for cover. They have tanks and platoons in their sight. It's a precarious position, so the squad falls back to the ridge. A couple of the guys get killed. Nobody that we even knew yet, just randoms. And one of the guys, Spigs, I believe his name is, takes a bullet in the thigh. It's got an animated feel to it. It's got some sort of a filter. I can't explain it other than the fact that I've done this in the past with Photoshop, where you throw it through a filter and it's almost like a cartoon filter. I'm not sure how I feel about this yet. You know, 5 minutes into this show, it's a little distracting to me. I find it a little cheesy. What are your thoughts on this faux pas animation?
Yeah, it's not something I like. I get it. Like, I think the idea of the Liberator started with the History Channel, and they were wanting to do a series, and it just proved too expensive. So I think through the work of the series writer and a bunch of producers, they were able to find a home at Netflix, and they realized that if they did this, if they put on the show within this capacity, that they could save a lot of money. But I don't think it has the impact that they wanted to have. And it was written by Jeb Stuart, the writer of Die Hard.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well,
so he
not a very good reflection of that. I mean, this not very exciting. I got a note here. You know, this seems kind of flat and depthless. You know, it's like, I know this was filmed on a green screen, maybe one, two, three characters at a time. And then the green screen was removed. They put in some sort of a painted background, and then they threw the shitty, geez, man, I'm going to be broke by the end of this episode. put over this, I got money, this shitty ass filter that they put on it. And it's just cheap to me. It's something that, with the technology that everyone has at their hands, this is something you can do with Photoshop. And again, it seemed flat and depthless. You know, I felt like it was a video game cutscene almost from an old video game, you know, where the cutscenes were old videos that they would film, and they would basically use the same technique, a couple guys on a green screen, and then they'd put a different background. You know, I thought, you know, Medal of Honor 1992 was about to start up after watching this. And again, you know, the action scenes in the beginning, this is our first taste of action, and again, it felt, with the animation, it felt really flat to me. This is, you know, nothing like the opening scenes of Saving Private Ryan or anything you've seen or felt in The Band of Brothers, and even like The Thin Red Line. You know, I'm going a little bit further back to more war movies that I know, nothing as current, but still, like, for a war action, yeah, this opening ambush scene, I mean, it fell flat. I wasn't fearful of these guys' lives at all. I didn't care that anyone got shot. You know, I was just hoping the next scene would be better than this one.
Yeah. It reminded me of a comic book feel, but yeah, it didn't hold up. The fact that they were trying to save money by using this technology, I think it just made it look cheap. And yeah, very hard to get in for sure. No, I totally agree with you, man. And you mentioned Thin Red Line and Saving Private Ryan. I think sounds like you're kind of hinting at what movie we're going to talk about in Media Rewind. Can't wait.
Yeah, you just wait, buddy.
And probably some sort of war movie you probably want us to
know it.
I mean, it's your pick this episode, so looking forward to what war movie you're going to make me look back on from the 90s, 80s.
All right, well, after this lackluster ambush, we move on to Salerno. It's obviously an Italian town that I can't...
Just say it with an Italian accent.
It's a Salerno. It's from a September in the 1940-fucking-3. You know, after they collect themselves, a few of these guys are dead and wounded. They all come, fall back to this small Italian town. Two soldiers check out a nearby barn and look for booby traps, and they find a small Italian boy there who they befriend and offer him food. Yummy, yummy, yummy. Really, again, you know, nothing standing out for me in this show yet other than the shitty animation, but I made mention I like the score that I'm hearing. It's fitting. It feels very Band of Brothers-ish. It feels dated. So if they did anything right, it was the score.
It was the score. Mm-hmm. Sean, you mentioned two words that or two things that perked me up was booby traps and animation. Booby traps and animation. Did you know that the U.S. War Department made animated videos called Booby Traps in 1944 to educate the soldiers and the people of America about just things that they had to be cautious of when they were in the war environment. And it featured a private snafu, which was a dull-witted, mistake-prone soldier. And he would walk around and it would just be like, it was done like a Looney Tunes cartoon and voiced, and like this private snafu was voiced by Mel Blanc, who was the same guy who did Bugs Bunny and every other Warner Brothers cartoon. And yeah, it was just completely, you know, how Looney Tunes cartoons are really not appropriate for kids nowadays. It's kind of done in the same vein, where this just kind of dim-witted soldier walks around and almost gets blown up and killed. And this was forms of entertainment, booby traps.
And they called them booby traps.
And I recommend you Google booby traps on the YouTube and make sure that you click on the animation.
I think everybody's pausing the episode right now and going to Google to search
booby traps
from 1944.
Yeah.
Well, I wish maybe we'll pause it right here.
And we're back. Sean looks flustered.
Thank you.
Sean, are you okay?
Get it.
And again, I feel like the show's trying to go for a diverse feel, but yet it falls flat again because it's written by an old white guy and it's told in the perspective of a flawless white, captain. It just doesn't feel like, it feels like it wants to be diverse, and we want to kind of go down this understanding of all, you know, the seeing a different picture of soldiers in World War II. because a lot of the movies and a lot of the shows that, you know, focus on World War II are usually, feature white Americans. So it's, you don't often see that perspective. But again, I don't feel like it does a good job.
No. And we keep getting forced that this captain is supposed to be, he's this great empathetic captain, leader of men, unifier. And I'm just not buying it.
Yeah. And I think for the next scene, what you're about to talk about, I think it even hits on this a little bit more on what kind of perspective this show wants to take.
Soldier Spiggs is then tied up and he's getting interrogated by an enemy German soldier. The soldier unties him and they talk about their shared experiences in America. Suddenly the soldier gets very angry and asks Spiggs what his squad did with the recent bridges. The soldier then sends a stark warning, threatening to kill all of Spiggs' squad by the next day. This is like an interrogation scene. Germans got this Spiggs guy, I guess.
I think it's an Italian guy. So the Axis powers were Germany and Italy and Japan were the main guys. And so I think this is supposed to run because Spiggs is an Italian American. And I think this, this from the Axis side is an Italian, captain who then the reference is that they are actually from the same neighborhood back in the States.
Right.
But one went to go fight for the Allies and one went to go fight for the Axis.
Pretty coincidental. All the soldiers out there that the two of them that meet, they were,
right.
But whatever.
But the reality
it sells the story, right?
And the reality of two Americans being called to war, but called for two different sides,
right?
Was a reality. So here's an opportunity for them to play that out. I don't know if it was done, genuinely or not. But
again, we're thrown into the scene though, and like, when did this guy get captured?
Yeah, you don't see. He took the bullet, and then I guess he got left behind, and they captured
him. There's no tie in here. It's just some guy's captured. Okay. Great.
Well, again, it points right out to the look at the diversity. Look, we're going to hint on the idea that you've got Mexicans and Indians fighting for the U.S. side. But, back home, they're not treated the same. And I don't think it was executed well.
Yeah, this is just like throwing it in your face. And I mean, they keep reiterating the same thing over and over again.
And then they're going to show you it later in the show, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's just in your face. I was like, okay, I get it. You can show it to me in different ways, except other than repeating the same friggin' line all the time.
Here's the real, this was your pick for this episode, The Liberators, no judgment on you. But it was one of the challenges that I thought about. I'm like, okay, so we're going to talk about The Liberators. It's not a great show, so we're going to be bumming out this whole episode talking about how much we don't like this show, so that's kind of a bummer. But also, it's very hard, I find, to be able to have fun talking about World War II. It's a fine line that we have to hold to be silly, to be a silly podcast, but also respect the fact that World War II...
Yeah, it was scariest environment imaginable for these poor guys. Most of them didn't even want to be there. And all the sacrifices that they gave for us. You're not really pulling too many of that's such a nice moment out of these things. No. There's certainly not too many feel good moments in here.
No, and it's kind of hard to riff on the themes of a war movie.
But if you go back to movies, good movies like even Platoon or Saving Private Ryan, there's the odd camaraderie scene that is a little bit more lighthearted. You get some sense of having some sort of social interaction with one another. We're not getting it here.
Liberators, mount up.
So let's move on. Okay. Well, in the next scene, the Thunderbirds gather and speak to the Italian. We're back to the barn. Captain Sparks then changes the perspective of this young boy who was scared of them at first because of the German propaganda.
He says one line. And remember, Italy's on Germany's side, and he's an Italian. But you know what? These soldiers, hey, I like the talk of their gym.
They got the Hershey bar for me. Anyways, the next day, the Thunderbirds move on to a German tank and manage to destroy it. But in the process, Captain Sparks is blown up and wounded. He's not blown up. He takes a blast, though. He's lying on the ground wounded.
And Larry himself will tell you that the artillery shell probably made up 75% of the wounded soldiers from both sides, wounded by mortars or artillery shells. Ugh. It was the best way to defeat your enemy because, you know, a rifle, you get them one by one, but an artillery shell, man, that's hundreds of pieces. You can get 10 people at one time.
Ugh. Can you imagine?
I can't even imagine. No, that would be terrible.
Sometimes I'm watching these war shows and I can't possibly fathom.
Did you watch the Peter Jackson documentary, They Shall Not Grow Old? So I was kind of going through a little bit of the rabbit hole of like why war movies? Why World War II movies? Out of all the war movies that is made, majority of them are World War II movies. So why war movies? Why World War II movies? I think World War II movies, one of the reasons is I think it's the concept for America is really easy to digest versus like a Vietnam War. Mm. Whereas in World War II, well, we did it for a purpose. We, you know, Pearl Harbor, you know, the concentration camps, you know, good versus evil. There's no, you can't mistake the reasons of World War II and the fact that we won and we were the good guys. And I think that's an easy concept to digest. And
more storylines out of that one, or more Hollywood storylines anyways.
Easier Hollywood, right? For sure. Yeah. But I was reading an article, even like Apocalypse Now or movies that kind of try to put a darker spin on what, you know, on the effects of war are still kind of used as propaganda for war. Like it's still, you know, soldiers watch Apocalypse Now to get all jazzed up before they go on a mission. And so an article that I read was kind of referring me to Peter Jackson's.
You read a lot of articles.
Yeah, thank you. And to They Shall Not Grow Old, which is like Peter Jackson basically took original footage of the First World War and cut it all together. And over top of it, he used audio from like a BBC Imperial War Museum interviews, and he kind of intermingled them. So it was the first in a nice story that captured, like, you could see footage all the way from training to going to war and having some.
Didn't he colorize it too?
Yes.
And he kind of
added like special effects.
Yes. I haven't seen it per se, but yeah. I know what you're talking about. And I think
of the footage is like over 100 years old and would have never been able to be used.
Some of the technical feats that they did on it were quite amazing. Some pretty cool stuff.
But again, like it shows the first part of that movie is all about the soldiers talking about how it was such a positive experience and that how they would always go back to those moments and what they were able to go get from that time changed the rest of their life and almost for the better. Like they sent a positive out. And then the movie proceeds to show you the worst shit that you could ever imagine. And this is not just movie making. This is just real documentary footage of men with gangrene, like feet like falling off because they're living in trenches that are like 2 feet deep of water, that they're crawling with lice, that they're sitting on dead horses, that they're lying beside their buddy who just got shot in the head. And these are all like real footage. And at least like that, like some, I'll watch a war movie, like I watch an action movie and I come out of a movie theater wanting to like Chuck Norris, like posts. And I want to like, you know, you feel all jazzed up. Like you just saw something that motivated you, but at least watching They Shall Not Grow Old with Peter Jackson's documentary, you get the idea where you're like, I never want to go to war. that is terrible.
There's nothing Hollywood about war whatsoever. No,
there's nothing Hollywood. And despite the camaraderie, like you were mentioning, and I think is real, and you know, it kind of, I know it, I think it appeals to a lot of people, and I can understand that appeal. But at the same time, it just sounds like, I don't know, it just sounds like the worst experience anyone could go through, and it's not something you'd wish on anybody. And why aren't there movies about the Korean War? Riddle me that, Batman. When was the last Korean War movie you saw?
I'm not Batman. I don't know.
Where's Rachel? Where's the bombs? Where's the Korean War?
Where are the drugs?
Where are the drugs? Where's Rachel? Maybe you wondered why you'd shoot a man before throwing him out of a plane. That's my Bane impersonation.
That's pretty good. Again, all these guys are like stuck in this barn for this evening. This is a good opportunity for the screenwriters or scripters to maybe have a moment of bonding, something here, show us some more personality, show us these guys conflicting, you know, one or the other. But instead, they're just sitting around trying to loosely translate with this Italian boy. There's like, oh, does anybody speak Italian? Oh, I just speak a little bit, but yet this guy's here. Captain Sparks goes off on this epic monologue and the guy's translating away. It's like, you speak fine Italian, jerk off.
Sounds like a fluent Italian speaker.
Yeah, anyways, and again, Captain Sparks tries to give this epic, uniting speech about how great cowboys and Indians are as far as warriors and stuff, and the backgrounds and heritage of all these men. It's falling flat, and it's just not working for me.
You just love the show.
I watched it again before to do these notes, and it was a struggle, man.
Yeah, I only watched it once. I didn't bother going back. I wonder if we're going to recommend this show to others.
Yeah, can you guys wonder if we're going to recommend this show?
I am at the edge of my seat. I have no idea what's going to happen.
After this scene, before the captain gets wounded and they mortar this tank, which supposedly I did a little research actually myself.
Ooh, look at you.
And I heard that it is very impossible. Like, you're not destroying a tank with a mortar, that the tank's armor's too strong. It's not really realistic. And I'll circle sort of back to that in a couple segments later about the sort of realism of the military scenes or the action scenes in this show. But just before the captain's blown up, there's this plane that flies overhead and the guy's like, oh, he's got some war charge going on, like gearing up his men. And he pulls out his pistol, which has an imprint of his wife on it. Anyways, he sort of brings out this magnificent pistol and he starts shooting at this plane, you know, hundreds of feet up in the air. And I mean, I'm no weapons expert, but I'm pretty sure firing a pistol at a plane that's hundreds of feet above you is absolutely pointless. These guys don't have ammo up to the tits. So what the hell is this guy who's in charge showing these guys, waste your ammo, just fire in the sky, like, and then he gets blown up. You know, I was glad this guy got blown up. Anyone who's stupid enough to take a pistol and try and fire at an airplane, you know, I don't know what this guy was trying to do. Clearly, he ain't all there, is he? So, yeah.
Maybe that was a Michael Bay moment where he just kind of was on his knees just shooting into the sky.
You know, or like in the Saving Private Ryan, you know, when near the end where Tom Hanks is kind of,
oh, yeah,
and he's firing at the tank with a pistol and all of a sudden the tank blows up. You're like, huh? But it wasn't his pistol that did it. It was, a grenade or something else. It certainly wasn't a mortar, because apparently mortars can't penetrate tanks like that.
And the old man's Matt Damon, not Tom Hanks.
Matt Damon.
Yeah.
Good war movie. Saving Private Ryan.
Great movie. Anyways, this one was not. Let's move on.
Oh, I wonder how Sean feels about this show. Keep going, Sean. Okay. Keep talking about this lovely show.
So we then go 2 years back to a flashback. where Sparks has re-enlisted. He's fully aware that there is a war on the horizon, and he's given the task to repair this J Company. Sparks then visits a jail where most of this J Company is being detained. Sparks asks the corporal to open the doors and tell them, and he tells all this J Company that this is their last chance to prove themselves and prove everyone else wrong, to earn some R&R off the base. And he asks them to lace up and join him outside. And he's got a week tasked with making these guys pass their firing squad tests. Challenge accepted.
Yeah, I mean, he can do it. If anyone can do it, Larry can do it.
Larry's got it. Larry's got it. He's given the challenge by this other actor. I'm just going to call him George Clooney, motherfucker, from now on.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, that's some coinage happening in the swear jar.
Yeah, that's okay. It's worth it. All the background extras are really standing out to me, and it's because they're just very robotic. They seem to just be walking in straight lines. It's like, hey, mom, I need an extra. Can you throw on some military clothes and walk across this green screen, and I'm going to comp you in the background.
But what do I do with my hands? Where do I put my hands when I'm walking by? Should I put them in my pockets? Can I hold something?
That's what it looked like, eh? It's just, again, I've got a note here. No one can act in this show. did they just grab all the crew to be extras? Because it sure seems like it. And it just does not look good.
I mean, if they're going to save money with the animation technology, they might as well hire some no-name actors and save more money.
I think if you're just go with the two, three, whatever, your main actors on screen, and stop trying to populate the scene with more people, because these extras walking by, you can tell they're just walking by for the sake of walking by to give the scene some depth and all that. And it's cheesy. It's bad. It's sticking out as just really poor production quality. So we're introduced to some of the team here in this jail scene. Are all these guys in jail?
Is J Company standing for jail?
Jail Company?
Is it the Jail Company?
I think so, because I think every single one of these guys was locked up in a jail cell. So it's kind of the bad news bears of the army here.
Yeah, seems silly.
Yeah. And but yet, Captain Pretty Boy Sparks, Larry here, was able to wrangle them all with, again, another lackluster, forced, pretentious speech about uniting them. Didn't work for me. This is trying to be some sort of Band of Brothers. It is not. And again, we get a quick, like, 15-second montage of them basically training, getting ready for, you know, over the course of the week to get ready for this test to make sure that they all pass. And they've all supposed to have bonded or helped each other or whatever. And it's just weak.
You know, what I would have loved to have seen is, I know we get a lot of anti-hero stuff, but I would have loved to have seen Larry as an anti-hero. Like, maybe not the classic good guy, can talk people out, but like actually see him struggle, actually see him not really have good command of these guys. I don't know. Like, I think that would have been a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, you said this is the writer of Die Hard, right?
Yeah, give
me a fucking John McClane leading these guys, you know? Give me someone damaged, beaten, insecurities and flaws and stuff, not this pretty boy.
And he has the option. Larry has the option to go home. He has the option to be like, all right, dude, your liver's removed or whatever. You just got artillery shells in your body. You can sit this one out. And he's like, nah, I'm going to go back. And that would have been a cool character piece. Like, why is this guy trading his wife and his child, who he hasn't even met yet? The child, like, I don't think he meets his child until the child's like 2.5, 3 years old, because the child's born after he leaves for North Africa. So it's like, here's this opportunity to go home after a big injury, and he doesn't do it. And that's interesting to me. What, you know, how he made that decision.
It is interesting, and that he has that decision. But again, it's like, you don't feel any of the confliction, you know. You just get an odd
Well, I like the war and the wars. You know, like
the old letter written home. I'm conflicted. Oh, okay. Well, great asshole. That was worth it.
Yeah.
Moving on. Sparks learns that this guy named Coldfoot was demoted. He's been in the army for 3 years, yet he's still a private, and he ended up in a fight when he was denied a promotion. Sparks is slowly trying to gain their trust, even defending them against a racist firing range sergeant, in which Sparks allows one of his soldiers to fight. Sparks then meets Coldfoot outside of a bar that says no Indians, no Mexicans, and tells Coldfoot he's putting him up for sergeant.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, the guy didn't get promoted, so what does Sparks do? He promotes him. I mean, it's that logical.
There must be a reason why he never 3 years and he never made it past private.
Well, again, and let's see that. That's an interesting story. Like, let's see.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, this like let's see that, not just the idea of like, don't worry, buddy, I promoted you.
Again, man, acting is so bad. And this drill sergeant, this meathead, Vin Diesel. This is how I talk. Anyways,
I think it's worth it for people to watch this show maybe. Just to see this guy, like how bad this whole thing is.
Yeah, like I knew this show wasn't very good, but as soon as this drill sergeant came out, it was just it turned really, really bad. So sorry.
He didn't look like, he didn't feel like an actor to me.
No.
He felt like maybe he was the personal trainer of the director or something like that. Roided up. Didn't like, is like, were people that big in the 30s and 40s? I don't think so.
No.
I don't know.
This guy was a tank and supposedly this Coldfoot guy's tough as nails and beats the junk out of this tank guy. And again, what because this Coldfoot guy got in a couple fights in the past, the captain all of a sudden assumes that he's tough as nails and sends him in. I mean, I don't think any of these guys.
He was in jail. He was in J Company. He can do anything.
Jail Company.
That all they can do is just push ups and sit ups and fight each other.
So this guy is tough.
This guy's tough. Mm. You don't get in J Company for being a wimp.
Right. Cut to they've flawlessly passed their You don't even see it. George Clooney wannabe comes back with the test results and they've scored the best anybody's ever scored at a firing range before. And no thanks to absolutely nobody, because we saw absolutely zero progress in that regard, but they're magically the cream of the crop.
Yeah, they let him out of jail, and it's amazing what they can do.
Yeah, let's just move on,
please.
Okay, sorry, we got to try and get through this. Again, we're back to the hospital, and a doctor that looks like he could be straight up a Bond villain tells him that he gets a free ticket home. Time to go home.
Yeah, go home, buddy. Go home to your kid.
Time to go home.
Go see your kid.
Go home to your wife and kid. But you know, as we will talk about right here, he does not go home. So
I think I'll go back.
Yeah, he takes off. He's told that he'll be considered AWOL. I'm not quite sure what that means. I've heard that term a lot. I probably should know what it means.
Means if you're not dismissed, but you just leave the army.
What does the AWOL stand for? Do you know? It's got to be an acronym for something.
Oh, yeah. No, it is an acronym. But I think it's when you're not dismissed and you just leave on your own accord. Absent without official leave.
Oh, there you go.
AWOL.
Now we know. Yeah. Absent without official leave. AWOL. That makes sense.
My papa was AWOL.
Ooh.
Quite a bit in World War II.
Ooh, getting his.
My mom's dad. Getting some intel here.
Getting his, what do they call it? Town time? I don't know. What do they call it? Leave. Where you get leave.
Gets.
I don't know.
I think that was shore leave.
Shore leave. Whatever. I think town time sounds a lot better, though, because you know what's going on at town time.
Town time.
George Clooney wannabe's got his leg blasted off. They meet and they go and have a drink. This guy can go home to his wife and kid that he's never seen, but he decides not to.
Now you've seen the show twice. I was just going to ask, did they actually say that he has a kid?
Yes,
did
he's
they
got
say
a
that
son.
Felix Sparks?
Yeah, he has a son.
So they say that in the show.
Yeah,
they say
George
it in the
Clooney
show.
Said,
okay.
you go home to your wife and your son.
Ah, okay. Thank you.
And he said, yeah, go make more kids. Have some town time and go make some more kids.
Yeah. Which, spoiler, he does, by the way, when he gets home. He does have more kids.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't get past this episode, obviously.
Spoiler.
I don't know. I had a problem with this. This guy's got a wife and kid at home that he can go help raise his kid, or he can stay and die, and he possibly die, most likely die.
Most of them did.
Yeah. But he decides to stay because he's got feels this bond with his squad that he has to go back and help them fight. And I think this guy's a bit of an asshole for not going home. When you listen
to the real Larry talk, like if you watch, like you can Google Felix Sparks on the YouTube and watch the real Larry talk. He feels like. And I don't know if he started off this way, but he feels like a career soldier. Like he talked like as an 80-year-old
like this
man.
This is my job. It wasn't just I was recruited to go.
No, and he'll report almost like every detail. Well, then on Saturday, November 1943, we went over the enemy line, and my lieutenant beside me, Lieutenant Frank Spiel, he said, you know, and so he can, with great detail, kind of step by step, go through each part of the war, and he does this for the 500 days that the Thunderbirds were out there, and so you can really feel like. So the personal element of this character isn't there when you listen to him. Like he's just very, you can just feel like he's just did really well at writing reports after each day. And that's kind of where he probably succeeded in the regards that he could separate himself with the people that he commanded. Which I think, again, would have been a little bit more of an interesting artistic choice as well, to find someone who was maybe a little bit more focused on the facts and less about the human element of the war. But what we see in this Netflix special is just someone who's so insightful and so in touch with his men and can just say a few words and inspire Italian boys and change everyone around him in their opinion of their values, which is which seems false.
He rejoins the men in battle. Where was the military consulting in this show? The guy's in the middle of the battle and this captain runs in. He's standing straight up. Everybody else is in bunkers. I mean, this asshole is going to get shot again. Did he not learn anything the first time? He quickly grabs a guy. Oh, you better get down. It's like, well, you should have been down about 5 minutes ago. This guy is not a good captain. I would not follow Captain Sparks into battle. You're like Zach Morris on the battlefield. Yeah.
Time out. I loved how Zach could always like
freeze time.
I haven't watched it since I was a kid, but I remember as a kid I always thought that was like that's the coolest.
End episode.
So I think there's only one last question that I have for you, Sean. And I think it's the same question that everyone else is thinking, listening to this episode. Did you like The Liberator?
I did not like this. I am so sorry that I made you watch this. But you know what? This wouldn't be a good podcast if we loved every single thing that we watched, right? But that's why we're here. We experienced the bad apples so you don't have to, right? We are now saving these people. Whoever has decided to sit through this podcast today,
no one
from turning on this piece of turd.
And so the interesting thing with the, and I don't, and again, I, this was, the, I said the best thing earlier about this whole show was me just doing more research on my own and learning a little bit more. And I would say, instead of watching The Liberator on Netflix, I say, do some research on this campaign,
the
Thunderbirds and the information like the, and you can watch, the real Larry talk, about, which was, I think is the pinnacle of this story is all about the ending and it's in The Liberator, i.e., the concentration camps, right? So like mm-hmm. that this group ends up going to Dachau, which ends up like uncovering about 30,000
people living in a concentration camp, a bunch of Jewish people from a concentration camp, and I think that's the ending,
right? That's the thing that's going to turn around everything, and maybe that is where the show gets good, maybe in the last episode when they start getting to that point. I don't know,
maybe, we're not going to get there. Did not engage me enough to care to even figure that out.
And just the details that the real Larry will talk about going into Dachau are mind blowing. So I definitely recommend people checking out him just talking about that on YouTube.
Spend that 45 minutes doing something else, researching mm-hmm. the Thunderbirds on your own rather than mm-hmm. actually watching this show. You'll probably get a lot more out of going down a couple rabbit holes on the internet looking at the Thunderbirds than you'll get out of this piece of shit show. So I think we should, while you probably can tell our ratings, let's rate it.
This
shit is awesome.
You suck.
Okay, cool. Well, I mean, I don't think it's much surprise what I feel about this show. But
Sean,
I don't think it's much surprise what I feel about this show. So
Sean,
why did you say that again?
I just want to say your name now, but only while you're saying that line. Mm.
And so, yeah, I'm just going to go for it here, Russ. Just going to go for
it. Yeah, please. Characters, Sean.
I give it a one out of five. Now, it's not a zero, but it is just a one. I'm just going to read my notes. Not one character did I care about. There's not enough backstory or hardships for me to feel anything for any of these guys. Not one of them had very good acting skills, and most were either sort of stand-in caliber or they were just there as sort of a visual puppet of a particular genre of a team member. You know, like the fat guy with the rocket launcher or the skinny smart guy, you know, with the map or the Indian tracker guy. Anyways, I got notes here, you know. George Clooney can suck a dick, and the Vin Diesel guy was just an extra nugget on an already big pile of turds. So, I mean, it doesn't get a zero because I at least still watched them. Maybe some of them were comical. There you go. Vin Diesel was comical, if anything, so he got them a point.
You know what? I'm going to – I had a one, but I'm going to give – after hearing that, I'm giving it a zero.
Okay.
Forget it. I'm just giving no chemistry. I don't know if it was the acting or the technology or a combination of both. Yeah, every character fell flat. Not interested.
Okay. Story, our second category. Story. Now, I gave it a 2.5 out of 5. Now, for that, there's a reason for that. The only reason I gave this a bit of a higher score is the fact that it's a real story. So I can't say, oh, the sword is stupid because it's a real story. These guys really went out and spent 500 days fighting for us. So I'm not going to sit here and say that, and discredit anything that they did or the story behind it, which I'm sure is a lot better. The real story is a lot better than what we watched in the 45 minutes here.
Yeah, I'll give it a 2 as well. I think it's a cliche story within the World War II environment, pretty rich place to tell stories. And again, these guys are going to do amazing things. You know, when you look at it from the sky, they're doing some pretty crazy things. They're fighting the Germans. I would have liked to see flawed characters. I mean, no one's perfect. And I think you could have still depicted these guys as heroes, but seen a little bit more of a genuine look on humans versus just kind of like a two-dimensional look what they all did. So I would say 2 for the story.
Interest. I gave it a 1, but you know what? The more we talked about it, I'm sorry, I'm going down to 0. I do have a point here. It's 1, but I have a point why I gave it a 1 and not a 0. It's not just a 0 because there was the odd shot that I thought looked cool. There was an odd shot which I thought looked kind of interesting, so it got a point on my interest scale. at the end, I mean, I just started laughing at the scenes and the acting. It was the only thing that sort of kept me going to the end was laughing at it. And I couldn't get over that cheesy trioscope enhanced hybrid animation effect. That's a tongue twister, but nope. I know a lot of people, a lot of comments online were saying just try and get over it. It gets better. But kind of a technical post-production guy myself, I couldn't get over it. It removed me too much. It disinterested me. Coupled with the horrible acting, both vocally and physically, but just like the physical acting of these people in the background, you know, didn't seem like any military training whatsoever. It just seemed too amateur to be a spotlighted Netflix series for me. Felt very high school. I couldn't wait for it to be over, and I can't be bothered to watch any subsequent episodes of it. So interest one.
And I'm going to say interest two for me. I think based on my own research, not for anything the show did, but based on my own research, I am interested to watch the rest of the series. I, you know, to your point, if you did some research and some of the reviews were saying, just stick with it. That interests me again. So it's kind of, it's not necessarily what the show gave me, but maybe the potential of the overarching story and what other people are saying is stick with it. I know there's some series do have slow burns and you do have to kind of sometimes get through the first episode, but it's nothing that the first episode did to make me stick around, but I am because of what it is and what the potential could be. I give it a two. I don't think I'll watch any more, but I may.
So you haven't watched anything past
the first? No, I haven't gone back. No.
Okay.
Feel like you want to throw up?
Okay.
Now it's time for temperature check.
That's right. Let's look back at the shows we've already reviewed and see if the temperatures align.
So last episode, we reviewed your pick, The Truth Seekers, and we gave it a pretty decent score.
Yeah, for me, unfortunately, it never got as good as the first episode. I did watch the whole series. It got a little bit too cheesy for my taste. Sci-fi. I like my sci-fi sophisticated. Right. It's never. And also, like, I binged it, and I think looking back, I probably wished I had just maybe done an episode a week and kind of sat with the mystery of it a little bit more. But once like getting through it really quick, it just kind of, just felt a little shallow at the end of it. Yeah, I don't know. I might watch the second season if there ever is one, and I'll continue to supporting Nick Frost and Simon Pegg. But yeah, Truth Seekers didn't hold up for me.
Yeah, as per our suggestion, I went on and tried to watch episode two, and I struggled to get through it. Fell asleep a couple times, had to go back, rewatch it, and that's just not a good sign for me. Especially considering it's a 25-minute episode.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Stop watching it at 3 a.m.
Well, it wasn't 3 a.m.
Okay.
Anyways, 2 a.m. Yeah, you know, they wrapped the second episode. They wrapped up the whole radio storyline right away. You know, I thought if anything, that was quite intriguing and something they could have used to string along episode to episode. But instead, they just wrapped it up pretty much right away in episode two and Bob Drunkel. And yeah, so I guess, you know, you finished the series. I stopped after episode two, but I guess most of the episodes were basically self-contained. And
there was a overarching story that they got more that kind of made up the last few episodes for sure. But there were a little bit self-contained for the first little right. bit, but they all fed into the larger overarching story. So
the whole purpose of this segment is now for us to go back and if you were to go back to our episode now, again, knowing what you now know, would you have recommended it?
Based on the fact that there's so much content out there, I probably would not. But I wouldn't tell people not to watch it. If they like kind of cheesy British sci-fi, then you definitely watch it. If they enjoy Nick Frost and Simon Pegg, definitely watch it. I don't regret watching the whole thing, but it didn't hold up to what I had hoped.
Right. Yeah, I don't regret watching the first episode. Even the second was okay, but yeah, it wasn't enough to keep me going on to the third or finishing it. So I'll have to take your word for it, Russell, and just assume that I probably saw the best that there was with the first episode there. So
yeah, and the cool thing about when we pick episode like shows that are fiction, there's a lot more opportunity for us to make predictions because, you know, obviously we all know how World War II ended,
right.
But we don't know how the Truth Seekers ended. And so I enjoyed watching it and kind of thinking back about, oh, Sean predicted this. Oh, I predicted this. Oh, I thought this was going to be. So I enjoyed that part of it. And then in the future, hopefully we can do more of that prediction stuff.
Yeah, I think it's pretty safe to assume that we won't be doing any World War II movies or shows for a while here. They're kind of bummers.
Let's go back to Media Rewind. Sean, speaking of all these war movies, what did you want us to rewatch?
Well, you thought I was going to pick probably another World War II movie.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a war movie for sure.
Kind of is a war movie. A Western gang war movie. I picked the wonderful 1988 Western movie Young Guns.
Released in 1988, a year before we met.
But we did watch this movie together.
Oh, I'm pretty sure we both had the VHS and it was on constant repeat.
Yeah. I think we rewinded many times, watched it many times. That and the original Batman, I remember we watched many times. You had that. Young Guns.
Jack.
This movie is a much better way to spend your time than watching The Liberator. Do you agree?
I agree. I hadn't watched this movie, I'm sure for many years. And just the opening scene of like all the actors just kind of looking right down at the camera.
Black and white
steel, and then just shooting for a good 5 minutes. And you're like, okay, that's the movie I'm about to watch. Great. Okay. I've got this is not highbrow entertainment. No. This is the Brat Pack
of our generation, was it not?
I guess you would call it
these guys, the Charlie Sheen, Lou Diamond Phillips, Emilio Estevez.
A lot of Hollywood elite families there.
Yeah. Big star studded cast. I enjoyed this movie. It holds up. There's no large special effects or anything. So it's dated a bit. And what are we looking at? Oh, 32 years old now.
Yeah.
It aged well, I found.
I mean, other
it's
than
still fun. It's still a yes. fun I call this like a MTV Western, I guess you would call it.
Sure. But I like we touched on this in our last episode of how these movies messed us up, how in regards to like toxic masculinity, I think is the word the phrase you use, which is great. What doesn't hold up in this movie?
The death scenes are pretty bad.
I think the treatment of women representation in this movie is terrible.
Right, this would not pass the Belichick.
The Bechdel test.
No, the Bechdel test. No.
The two women do not talk to each other. Well, and the only like one main female character. Well, I guess there's two. There's John Locke's wife, and then there's who I think they refer to her as China Doll a lot.
Yeah, Jack Palance just called her China when she was running away. He's like China. China. Okay, there you go. There's one thing that would not fly right now. No,
that does not hold up. I mean, the idea of what happens to this character is correct in that time, like in regards to Chinese people coming over to America and being used as slaves. So that's realistic, but just like the depiction of it's the trope of like the submissive China doll thing that the movie went into, and the fact that Doc treats her kind of like shit the whole time, but yet, you know, she risks her whole life running into a building that's literally under fire and being shot at. And for what? Why? To go hang out with the lesser of the two bad white dudes? I don't know. It just isn't... I just stay with Jack Palance.
How he wooed her so easily is a bit of a mystery, you know.
Yeah, he sneaks into her bedroom Not invited. Yeah, creepy. And she tells him to go. He does not. And then he tries to give her flowers on the road and yells at her.
Yes.
Like, there's just a lot of... Yeah.
It's like, geez.
There's just a lot. So those things are kind of... they don't hold up. But again, I think when you kind of remove those elements and again, I came back to the point of like, oh, fuck yeah, I loved Young Guns as a kid.
Oh, and you know, the whole China thing, but Dermot Mulroney's distaste for the Navajo Indian nation too, you know, his slandering and all that. I don't know if that would really fly now either. It was a little...
Well, I mean, obviously there was racism back then. And again, I think it's the tropes of like the noble savage, the Chavez.
Sure. I think they might have used some more common day terminology though in some of his slander.
But Lou Diamond Phillips is amazing. And like, he's great.
Yeah, I was just going to, I've got a note about that. You know, this is Liberator. Take note. Lou Diamond Phillips has this great sort of monologue where he talks about Emilio Estevez, Billy the Kid, accuses him of all this that they're doing meaning nothing to him. You know, there's no sense of retribution for him. And you know, Lou Diamond Phillips puts him in his place, Chavez puts him in his place, tells him, you know, these guys have murdered my entire reservation, killed my entire family. It means nothing to me. I mean, it was a great speech.
I don't know if he said reservation, but...
Wait, what? No?
I think the reserve is more...
Sorry.
No, I don't think they would. I don't think they would say reserve or reservation back then. I think
that was... Sorry, he might have used the word tribe.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's
okay. We're always, you know, BC, there's reservations everywhere and stuff like that. So,
but I think the reason why there's reservations is because of the...
Anyways, that's another podcast, Russell.
Yeah.
Okay. What I'm getting at here is that it was a very emotional scene. Tears were coming out. I bought into it and I felt something for it. And it wasn't a very long scene, but, you know, just, you know, 32 year difference, but just much better screenwriting. And, you know, out of a 30 second scene like that with Lute, I felt more about him and his backstory and empathy towards him than I did in the 45 minutes of them trying to force it down our throats in The Liberator, you know. So,
yeah,
take note. John Tunstall was not as old as he was depicted in Young Guns. He was only 24 years old during this sort of rival gang escapade back in the day. It was Doc Kiefer Sutherland's character, who was about 32 years old, who was the senior of the group there. Hmm. So I don't think John Tunstall was as much as the... I'm sure he did take these guys in and house these renegades. He was not the old wise man depicted in the movie.
But you could see why, I guess, the movie made that choice.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Especially the
some
retribution.
Some sort of father figure
It almost makes it all palatable, the fact that they go on a murder rampage.
Right, right. So it's safe to assume that we both enjoyed rewatching this movie.
Yeah, because I loved it so much as a kid, like, Emilio Estevez always has a place in my heart, even though I can't really... I think the only other thing that I really loved him in was in Mission Impossible 1 when he dies within the first 15 minutes. It's great. A lot of these guys are now like just really big TV actors. Like, most of them
Of them went on to like really big things. Obviously, I mean, Charlie Sheen, I think, was kind of big already. He was only in this movie for... what, about 10 or 15 minutes of screen time, and he gets one of the first credits, and he's one of the first to die. He was a bit of a headliner here. So
I think he had already been in Platoon and maybe Wall Street at this point. So he was already a Hollywood leading man.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, a lot of them here, you know, even Casey says he's Miesco or whatever his name is,
right.
the pugilist. Or whatever, you're like, oh, what did he go? He went on to do... You go look at his... The guy hasn't stopped acting. Amazing.
Well, he did stop acting in 2018.
Oh, why did he die?
No, I just see that's the last. I looked at it because he was the only one. I was like, I don't know where this guy's been.
Yeah,
so
that's what I
also
thought.
Looked
I was like, where'd this guy? And I was like, oh, yeah, that's what he was. That's what he was.
He had a very Michael J. Fox vibe to me. I don't know why, but.
And he did some really big things prior to this, too. Like 3 O'Clock High was a really big movie. He's got a bit of a cult following. And he was actually acted alongside Kiefer Sutherland in another really good early movie, Stand By Me. He was one of the,
Kiefer Sutherland's in Stand By Me?
Kiefer Sutherland is in Stand By Me. He is the main bad guy.
Oh, the bad guy.
And Casey says, Mietzko is one of the thugs in his group as well. And he was in Back to the Future too. Now I'm starting to remember. He's kind of one of those guys that pops up everywhere. He's not a main guy, but he's pops in.
And it's he has a very fun character in Young Guns.
He's a great character. You don't want him to die, and you feel sad when he dies.
What? They don't ruin it.
Jesus, people have had 32 years to watch this movie. If you haven't watched it yet, and I just spoiled it for you. That's your problem.
And then in Young Guns 2, everybody dies. Yeah.
Young Guns 2 is good too, though.
I know. It made me, like, when I was thinking back my memories before I watched Young Guns 1, I was thinking of things that actually were in Young Guns 2. So it makes me want to watch Young Guns 2 now.
You do get mixed up between the two of them a little bit. But because there's some great moments in Young Guns 2 too. John Locke is in Young Guns
2. Yeah, I was excited.
And he still
to
has
see...
no hair.
Yeah, Terry O'Quinn. I guess he early male pattern baldness.
Has he ever had hair?
I mean, I assume when he was 5, he had hair, more hair than he did now.
Whatever,
but
he can pull it off.
Yeah, it's great. Like, I love Lost, so it's great to see Terry O'Quinn. And I kind of understood that he was an accomplished actor before going into Lost, but I couldn't recall much of what he would have been in. But yeah, it's neat to see. Rewatch old movies and see actors who didn't really shine for you until later on in their career.
Yeah. And just one of the kind of things that stuck out to me rewatching this was that just some of the scenes or some of the ruthless killing that Billy the Kid did in this movie, but it just has such a Hollywood gloss. Right. Over it, you know, and because it's Emilio Estevez, this real baby face guy, you know. But if you really kind of break down the scenes and think about it happening in real life, I mean, this guy's a fucking psychopath. He would just blow people away at the drop of a hat and he would just sit there and have his little maniacal laugh. I mean, the one guy, the last guy to join the Renegades, came from the opposing gang, supposedly, and didn't dig it with them anymore. And then was running around on their early adventures, and Billy the Kid ends up thinking or sniffing him out as a snitch or a rat or whatever. Goes to shake his hand and then pulls out his gun and pretty much blows his brains out into Kiefer Sutherland's, and the guy's kind of like wobbling there, still standing, while Billy the Kid's laughing. The guy's probably still standing there with his brains, you know, splattered out all. And then Billy the Kid, you know, adds insult to injury, pulls out his gun again and shoots the guy a couple times in the chest before kicking him in the creek. And I mean, at the time when you're a kid, you're just like, oh yeah, okay, you know, just because it's just so Hollywood and the sound effect. But if you really break down, it's like, this guy's crazy.
This guy's the good guy?
Yeah, exactly. This is not a good guy. And then how all these guys stuck around with him after that, it's like, you're going to stick around with a guy like that. You guys all had it coming to you because
you got
to
leave your brain at the door.
Yeah.
I think when you watch this movie.
Yeah, no, I'll give you that. The whole MTV rapper on it. But, you know, again, another sort of Western depiction of Billy the Kid as some hero, good guy. But, you know, I don't know enough about Billy the Kid, but if you kind of go back it and just the fine tooth comb and look at some of these scenes and, you know, break them down, like the guy's a psycho. He would just at the drop of the hat, just kill people.
Is there another movie that depicts Billy the Kid? That's I can't think of one.
No, I'm talking out of my ass.
Oh, okay. I'm sure there is one.
When you were growing up, you never thought Billy the Kid was a bad guy.
Well, it's kind of like Robin Hood, man. They were criminals.
Yeah. Yeah. But because of folklore or whatever, all these stories, right. they're these fantastical heroes when you really look at some of the things they did. Like, this, it's just a raving lunatic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, go watch Young Guns if you can find it. And
favorite quote that you either remembered or were reminded when watching that movie?
Man, oh, there is he. And the chicken, the peyote scene.
You see the size of that chicken?
She's my flower.
The Charlie Sheen, Buenos Dias shitheads brought a smile back to my face.
Buenos Dias shitheads.
Because again, if we had, and like we did, we probably watched this movie over and over again. I'm sure we would repeat a lot of these.
Yeah.
And the whole regulators mount up was something I remember saying a long time.
Now we're going to move on to our last segment, Russell. This is a segment where we talk about things that we're excited about, that we're watching, that we're looking forward to watching. And yeah, we'll just kind of keep it short and sweet. Russ, what are you watching?
Well, I want to update you. I want to let you know that I did complete Emily in Paris.
We were all wondering that.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm on a couple of whodunits right now. So I'm watching The Flight Attendant on the HBO. And also with Kaylee... is it Cuoco?
Kaylee Cuoco?
Cuoco?
She's Cuoco.
Cuoco?
Kaylee Cuoco. Cuoco.
She's awesome in The Flight Attendant. And hopefully in the next couple of days, I'll be finishing The Undoing with Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant. Mm. Whodunits. Hmm. Some murder mysteries for you.
Nice.
What about you, Sean? What do you...
Christmas around the... I'm on a bit of a Christmas movie kick.
Oh, that's fun.
I'm almost done The Queen's Gambit. Oh, such a good show.
Good show.
I don't feel we even need to review that. I mean, the word on the street is it's good. Believe it.
Believe the hype.
It's good. We don't need to tell you to watch it. You know to go watch it. So, yeah. I've been rewatching the Harold and Kumar movies, actually.
And why?
I don't know. I just got them. They're funny stoner movies. I just put them on in the background sometimes when I'm working away on stuff at work where a movie's not really distracting. And they're really light. They're so stupid. And but, you know, I like it. I like the pothead humor sometimes and all that. So
yeah, I don't think I've ever watched them, so I have no basis. But that's cool. If you're recommending them, yeah.
I don't know if I can recommend them because they are so stupid.
Right.
So if I would not blame you or judge you if you did not like it and could not get through it because they're those silly raunch comedy kind of movies, you know, Animal House style kind of movies, you know.
If you know what you're getting into, I bet you they're a lot of fun.
Yeah, but anyways, the third one is Harold and Kumar Do Christmas. So yeah, there's some pretty funny moments in it. I checked out that The New Mutants. Oh, pass.
Yeah,
fucking pass that one.
I think I've heard bad things.
Yeah, there's a reason why I didn't do so well. And just with Christmas coming, I'm looking forward to rewatching Die Hard, and I've got Christmas Vacation in my queue. That's always a great one. So I can't wait until my girls are old enough to watch and appreciate Christmas Vacation. So that'll be good.
We both have daughters. My oldest daughter is 9, and we just I just made them watch Castaway the other night.
Oh, and how did she receive that?
Both of them watched it and there was some eyes, they closed their eyes a couple of times, but overall you can't go wrong with Wilson. Once Wilson comes in,
how did they handle that part when he lost Wilson?
They said it was sad, but I kind of walked them through what was going to happen. So they knew. I didn't want it to be a surprise. I kind of walked them through. I'm like, it's the execution anyways. It's very well executed movie. So I just kind of said, you know, this is what happens. Be prepared. So I kind of gave them a heads up. But
nice.
I do want to go back to our Anya Taylor-Joy corner. because you talked about the Queen's Gambit. Mm-hmm.
And she was in the New Mutants as well.
Oh, she's in the New Mutants
as well?
She is
in the New Mutants as well.
Oh, okay. And we had mentioned at the last, because we were talking about Simon Pegg, and she's in an Edgar Wright movie coming up. But she's also going to be Furiosa in the Furiosa movie.
Oh, shit. She's going to be the young Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting.
That is exciting. Like that Mad Max Fury Road is one of my favorite movies. And I was a little bit disappointed when Charlize Theron was not going to reprise her role. But now I'm excited again. We can all look forward to Furiosa in 2028.
2028?
I don't know, man. I just hope George Miller doesn't die.
Yeah.
Bye, everybody. Bye, Sean. Love you, man.
I love you, too. Everybody stay safe out there, all right?
I like this and you like that.